This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And with that, the Arizona Coyotes were no more. Welcome to the program. Shannon Goldman's going to stop by here in a couple of moments. Eric Francis on the Flames. Eric Engels. It's Eric Day. Eric Engels on the Montreal Canadiens. And plenty more to get to today as we await the results of a couple of games tonight to find out who's playing who, namely who are the Edmonton Oilers playing. We'll get there in a couple of seconds. Yes, we'll talk about Matthews. Yes, we'll talk about Nikita Kucherov. Congratulations on the century mark for assists. But Matt Marchese, here's what I want to ask everybody right now today. Where were you in 2009? Not specifically and geographically, where were you? But where were you at in your life in 2009?
Oh, boy. That's a heavy question.
How old were you? What were you doing?
So I was.
What was in your life?
I was 20.
Okay, you're 20 years old. So you still had a little gleam of optimism.
Yeah, I was still playing hockey.
Okay, so that's all been quenched. So now you're just like a cynical dad.
Yes, correct.
Grumble.
Yeah.
But back then, you had like a little bit of optimism about your life, right? 2009?
I would say so, yeah.
Okay, so that was when Jerry Moyes threw the keys on the table and said, this isn't happening for the then Phoenix Coyotes. I don't know what to do with this. You take it. We're going to bankruptcy. Enter Judge Redfield T-Bomb. I'm first. Next, you're going to hear about the Dallas Stars. Grumble. That's when all this started with the Arizona Coyotes. And it hit its end mark last night at Mullet Arena. Now, it's a win for the Arizona Coyotes. Congratulations. Love the standing ovation down the 15 last seconds of the game. For history purposes, Sean Durzi scores the final goal in Arizona Coyotes history, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But just think for one second. Where were you in your life in 2009? Because that's when this all began. And in the process, we've heard names like, well, Judge Redfield T-Bomb that I mentioned a couple of seconds ago. Barroway is a name. Like, there's been a lot of different names and figures and speculations and arenas and situations that we've gone through with Arizona that I would submit, Maddie, it's kind of become comfortable. Like, this has always just been an ongoing story with the Arizona Coyotes. We thought that somehow, some way, it would get resolved, and it never did. And now it marches to its inevitable conclusion where the Board of Governors of the NHL will have a conference call, Zoom call, whatever the call is today, and we expect something announced. I don't know if there's going to be an official press conference or not. I doubt it. We expect something official later on today about the Arizona Coyotes going to Salt Lake City. But Maddie, did it just grow that old that this story became just part of the hockey kaleidoscope, that it just became baked into the pie? This is the season, and these are the questions we're always going to have about the Arizona Coyotes. Like, did it not just sort of get comfortable that this is Arizona, and they're dysfunctional, but they're still part of this family?
Yeah, I was going to say, they're like the dysfunctional uncle that drinks at family events and has to tell you all about the good old times. I don't have one of those. I'm not speaking from experience. But
maybe,
it is.
Then maybe it's you, Matt. You know, they say there's one jerk at every party, but I don't believe it because I've never seen him. That means it's you.
I'm only an uncle to one, and I don't really drink. So, I mean, okay, maybe I'm just an idiot. Right. No, but it is true, though. Like, since I've started in this business, it's been an ongoing... The fact that a team is like, remember when Atlanta moved to Winnipeg?
Of course,
and there was there was like shock value. This one, there was no shock value. You're like, oh, okay, we just expected it.
Yeah.
Because you're right. It has just become part of the conversation of this is the NHL family. And there's that one team that kind of sits over there in Arizona that we're not sure what's going to happen every year. But hey, we may have a plan. We may not have a plan. This year we're playing in a college rink. Next year, we don't know where we're playing. And it just became kind of like, okay, just sit over there. Mm-hmm. Just play your games, sit over there. Don't have a lot of success on the ice for whatever it's been the last 5 to 10 years. Just stay over there and you'll just be part of this, but not really part of it.
It was weird watching that last night. I'm not going to lie to you. It was bizarre because a lot of this in a lot of ways just kind of happened suddenly, even though like this has taken a long time, but like to get from it's going to everyone digesting it quickly and now they're gone. Like it's gone. Bye-bye. See ya. Like last call, turn the lights off, all of it. It seemed to happen really quickly. And it's always been said that in life, and this probably happens at your place of business as well, things move in two speeds, super slow and super fast. And for the Arizona Coyotes, for the longest time, it moved glacially slow. And then, Maddie, it moved super fast.
Yeah.
And that took us to last night.
Yeah. And I think you're 100% accurate. It was like that. It wasn't even like a slow build. I almost just expected that they were going to play at Mullet Arena again next year. And then it was like, boom, that's it. They're not.
I'll tell you what. When Bill Daly said, yeah, it's probably too late to move.
Yeah.
The general managers. I think we all thought the same thing. Okay.
Here we go again.
Back at the college rink one more time.
Yeah. And the fact that it happened that quickly, I mean, it does make it a lot easier when you have someone who is in place like a Ryan Smith who can just say, here, look at all this money I have. I will take this problem that you have and I will make it my own. But if you're, it goes beyond even that. It's like, look at all the fans and what the fans have gone through over this time period. It's been a struggle. And look at all the people that are employed by the team or team broadcasters or people that cover the team. All of that. They've had to go through the ebbs and flows. And really, it's been kind of like a tidal wave of bad over the past 20 years for this team or 15 years for this team. It hasn't been good. I feel for the fans. I feel for the people in the organization. But there's also an opportunity here for this team to maybe reach heights that it never would have under the ownership that it had.
It's a fan base that has been speed bagged for a lot of years. It's a fan base that has been false started. It's a fan base that has been deceived, even by its most recent owner. All the time that he was negotiating the exit, all the social media for the Arizona Coyotes was, here's what the rink is going to look like. Here's the arena development. We're going for the auction. Hey, get excited, Arizona Coyotes fans. And then it was, you know, Charlie Brown and the football for them. Bam.
I think the arena thing is very interesting, too, because I think that's what also held me back a little bit. Like, they're going to wait to see out this auction and then see what happens with that and then make a decision on what the future of the organization is. They didn't even get to that point, Jeff.
Okay, was it just me, by the way? When you looked at the, and I can't stop seeing it once this thought entered my mind, when you looked at the designs of the proposed arena and the whole entertainment district, did the top of the rink not look like a tap dance shoe? And here they are, like, honestly, now that I've put that in your brain, like, go back and look at the renderings. It is a tap dance shoe as this team dekes out of Arizona and over to Utah, where it does feel very much like. I don't know that the NHL wanted Utah as much as they just wanted Ryan Smith in the mix as an owner in the NHL. Let's bring in Shannon Goldman from The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast here with her thoughts on the Coyotes, the playoffs, all of it. Maybe we'll even do wag jackets, which are going to become a thing here in short order. She is the great Shana Goldman. She joins me now. Shana, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
First of all, here's what I wanted to ask you right off the top.
Okay.
Alex Morello didn't go last night. Should Alex Morello have gone to the last game of the Arizona Coyotes last night, or would it have just cast such a negative shadow over all of it? Or should he do the right thing, much like, you know, Gary Bettman puts himself in situations where he knows he's going to get booed? Should Alex Morello have done the same last night?
I'm really torn on this. In some ways, I think no, he doesn't deserve to be there. He doesn't deserve to be a part of it, because as much as he might want to act like he's the face of bringing hockey back to Arizona, they're in this position because of him. This isn't some new development that he's a bad owner. Go back and read the profile that Katie Strang wrote, her investigative reporting, Gold Standard, and that piece, I think, captures everything about everything you need to know and more. So in so many ways, the players and the team deserve to have their moment, especially since he did everything in such a backhanded and slimy way. In other ways, though, you want to bring this team back to Arizona and you want to be the future of Arizona hockey and you still own, you know, the AHL club. Yeah, you should be there. Should you be on the ice with everybody and mourning the team? No, you should probably stay in the press box, but you should be able to man up and show your face. It just leaves a sour taste.
Yeah.
Because he should have to face the music. I mean, he created the situation. If there wasn't that entire social media tirade of the 0% chance of, you know, not losing the bid while he was doing everything in secret with the NHL, you know, it would feel a lot different, right?
And in a lot of ways, like, if you're an Arizona Coyotes fan, I think we've all thought a lot about this. They're still being held hostage, or at least it feels that way, because Alex Morello, now I don't know whether he has the desire, the energy, the money, the whatever to do this, but he's been granted this window to get an expansion team back in Arizona. So he had, now I have questions whether that's transferable or not. If it is, all of a sudden that deal looks even sweeter, and already he's walking away with $1 billion, which a lot of people are looking at and saying, like, hold on a second here. I'm sure there's more than one or two governors who've been writing, you know, revenue sharing checks for a lot of years that are looking at that and saying, hang on a second, he's putting what in his jeans? And I think we all understand that, you know, a lot of this sweetheart deal that Morello has been given is to make sure that none of this ends up in court. But still, the fact that he still holds the strings here about the next incarnation of whatever hockey team at the NHL level is going to be in Arizona still probably burns Arizona Coyotes fans. And as I mentioned before he came on, this fan base has been speed bagged for years, and right up until the very end, this team has just taken body blow, headshot. Like, it has been awful to be a Coyotes fan. I can't think of, like, the mental fatigue that all these people have been put through.
Yeah, totally agree. And, you know, you look at it and he is holding Arizona hockey hostage. I understand it to avoid him dragging the situation out and creating a bigger problem. You kind of had to appease him for a bit there. The $1 billion is definitely a stinger, I think, for everyone to keep in mind, especially owners. But then again, if the owners want to take solace in anything, it's, first of all, you're getting him out of the league with this $1 billion. And that's a great thing for everyone else if you can have a team that actually makes money. Second of all, I don't think the other owners are hurting for that $1 billion. Like, it seems like this owner is, considering all the payments he's missed and, you know, hasn't made over the years in all different capacities. So, yeah, it definitely shouldn't have come down to it this way, but it makes sense that it had to. So hopefully he is not the one granted a chance to bring a team back to Arizona. He doesn't deserve it. You know what? He hasn't earned it. I'm always, like, so tricky with the words deserve and earn. And I think that they mean two totally different things. I think you have to earn a chance to deserve that. And he hasn't done either.
What did you think watching that game last night?
It was so sad. I watched Coyotes broadcast. I don't know how you could have watched anything else.
Yeah.
And to hear the commentators going through it, the ones who have been there from day one, like Todd Walsh, like, it was just hard to listen to because you don't know if you have a job tomorrow. This uncertainty is something I think everyone who wants to dunk on the Coyotes has to keep in mind. You can feel that the Coyotes didn't work in Arizona because of this ownership group, but you can still feel for the staff and the players and the fans. Mm-hmm. And this is part of that staff that found out everything on social media and was treated pretty poorly the entire time. And they still handled it, I think, like champs out there. It was so hard to hear and listen to and how resigned everybody was, but they were the perfect people to do it because they feel everything with this organization.
Yeah. A little bit later on, we'll play the entire speech by Todd Walsh last night, which, if you haven't seen it, I think everybody's retweeted it by now, Shayna, that it was just so, like, the one thing you think of is, you know, the word grace when you see how Todd Walsh addressed everybody and, you know, his history with the team. It was grace. You get a chance, go watch it. We'll play it for you coming up in hour two. In the meantime, Shayna, a couple of things here. Of all the series, and not everything is settled here, we'll see what happens tonight and see how things shake out between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Los Angeles Kings. Who's in wild card? Who's in third in the Pacific? Which one are you spiciest about?
I think it might be Vancouver-Nashville. It's like the low-key series I might be the most excited about, which is saying something because we have Battle of Florida, we have Boston-Toronto. Like, we have amazing series here, even Colorado-Winnipeg. Like, there's really no wrong answer, but there's something about Nashville-Vancouver that really piques my interest because you have the Canucks, who have been great all year, right?
Yep.
Some of the best shooting talent. Thatcher Demko looks so sharp now that he's back.
Yep.
You have Quinn Hughes. You have Elias Pettersson. Like, it's filled with star power. They have deep lines. But then you look at the Predators, the team that maybe you didn't think would be here. You know, it felt like maybe they were destined for a finish in the middle. But you see the level that they've played since that fated night of not going to see you too, how everything's turned around. They're at 5-on-5, they're one of the best teams at generating shot scoring chances since losing that game to Dallas. They're one of the best shot and expected goal suppression teams. UC Saros has picked up the pace because he was, you know, up and down, and Lankinen has been very good behind him too. Roman Josi is playing Norris and Hart caliber hockey, and Philip Forsberg and Ryan O'Reilly are crushing it. And even guys like Ryan McDonagh, you're seeing why he's been so valued over the years. He plays a tough game, plays a lot of tough minutes, and just crushes them. So I think that series is maybe a little bit closer. Do I think the Canucks can still win it? Yeah, but you know, going into the playoffs before we knew the matchups, it felt like the Predators had this disruptor potential to upset a round one team.
You know, the interesting thing about this one for me is we might be looking at, you know, choice one and choice two for the Jack Adams, whether it's whether you're a Rick Tocchet person or you're an Andrew Burnett person. I think a lot of us are on the same page here that, you know, these are probably, this is probably 1-2. It's probably going to be Tocchet by the end of it, but Andrew Burnett will be right there for it. See, when I look at this one, I mean, it's hard not to be impressed by the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, at every single position, they have someone who's awesome. You mentioned Demko, you mentioned Quinn, you mentioned Pettersson, you mentioned JT Miller. I go on and on and on. And if Lindholm is playing like this in the playoffs, the way we've seen him recently, holy smokes, all of a sudden, Vancouver's going to be a really tough out. And then I look at the Nashville Predators, and the one thing comes to mind, I'm glad you mentioned Ryan McDonagh, because to me, Ryan McDonagh was that final piece of Tampa that they couldn't afford to lose. I always thought it was going to be Andre Palat. I always said to myself, whatever they do, they can't let go of Palat. That's the one guy. He can't be the cap casualty. Turns out it was Ryan McDonagh, and they haven't been the same since they let go of Ryan McDonagh. We'll see what they do against the Florida Panthers. But the thing that I come back to with Nashville is playoff experience. I'm not someone that always overhypes playoff experience, you know, the cups in the room and all that types of stuff. But I look at Ryan O'Reilly, I look at Roman Josi, I look at Ryan McDonagh, like I look at a lot of the players up and down that Nashville lineup, and there's that kind of healthy mix of youthful exuberance and let's just go and play hockey and have fun, and this is cool, it's the playoffs, with guys that have done it before and know how to say, hold on a second, here's how we behave in this situation. And then overriding all of it is Tocchet versus Burnett for the Jack Adams Trophy.
Yeah, it makes for a great matchup. Like with the Canucks, you know, you're saying how loaded that lineup is. And I think the key to it too is the lineup versatility they have, right? How many guys on that team can play center? JT Miller has been crushing it at center. I've been very critical of his game for years because he struggled down the middle. And I like that this year, all of a sudden, when they brought in Lindholm, he was like, wait a second, I'm not giving that position up so easily, and really elevated his game. But with the Predators, that mix of youth, the Tommy Novaks, the Luke Evangelistas, who were really good last year too, after Philip Forsberg was injured, at the end of that Hines tenure, those were the guys that added a little bit of pop, a little jump to that lineup. They were good, you know, in transition, which is something that the Predators really lack up front. You see guys like Forsberg can do it, and obviously Roman Josi brings the puck into the zone at a crazy high rate. Most defensemen don't carry that workload. They handle the exits, and the forwards take on, you know, the entries. Mm-hmm. But he does it all. And then you have these young guys going, wait, we can help out too. They're not as deep. They don't have as much support. But you're seeing the way everyone's kind of rallying. I feel like they're just a team that's, they're greater than the sum of their parts. And you bring in that experience and that infusion of youth, and it comes all together for something really interesting. And then, like you mentioned, the coaching impact. When we looked at, you know, early season impacts by coaches, Andrew Burnett's defensive system really took hold early there. And it's not the most surprising. We know the Predators to be a good defensive team. They really weren't outright bad under Hines either. But you have the vibes of Barry Trotz, the defensive specialist, who acknowledges you can teach defensive structure, but you need to bring in that offensive edge. And then you bring in Brunette, who we know can bring a lot of pace to a lineup. You look at the Devils, you look at the Panthers and the work that he did there. And it melts together really well. The other part of it, too, is they don't have anything to lose like the Canucks do, I feel like, because no one expected them to be here. And I think that there's something to the players maybe wanting to reward management for trusting them, right? Barry Trotz said it. It's hard to make the playoffs, and you want to reward those guys for everything they did, which is why they bought at the deadline for super low prices. I think that's another little element in there for some motivation.
You know, I talked about 1-2 for the Jack Adams. Do we see, last one, on this series, do we see a 1-2 for the Norris and Quinn Hughes and Roman Josi?
Absolutely. They are neck and neck for me. You give the offensive edge, I think, to Roman Josi, which it's very tight. It's not to take away what Quinn Hughes does. Watch him dominate in his minutes. But Josi is doing a lot with less. And then Quinn Hughes has the slight defensive edge for me over Josi, because the Predators actually allow more goals relative to his teammates in Josi's minutes versus Quinn Hughes. But It's such a tight race. I love it. That is the marquee matchup here for sure.
Okay, you're selling us on this one, because I'm kind of surprised you said Vancouver and Nashville out of the gate, but there we go. So great job. You're a great hype person for the opening round here for Vancouver and Nashville, so good on you. I honestly thought you were going to go to the Battle of Florida. And the one thing that I've pointed out about the Eastern Conference, I can't think of a first round where the travel is as easy as it looks in the Eastern Conference. Everyone's got easy travel here, and it's because Florida is facing off against Tampa. First of all, before I get to the series, Your thoughts on Nikita Kucherov last night? He hits the century mark for assists, the fifth player to do it. McDavid hit it a couple of nights before. And he joins the club, which is 66, 99, and 4. To me, the thing that was perfect about it was how that assist happened, because that to me is the Kucherov play. That is the perfect Kucherov assist. The fake one-timer turning into a pass to the slot for a Braden Point goal. We've seen it a million times, and everybody, Shayna, still bites on it. And there I was last night. I bet that he was shooting. And then I said to myself, hey, dum-dum, how many times have you seen that exact same play? Kucherov hitting the century mark on his signature play. Your thoughts?
I think he is maybe the most cerebral player in the league. And I know he gets a lot of flack. Some of it's because of the All-Star game, which I'm sorry, I literally don't care about at all. Like, get over yeah. it. You know, the knock against him, and we're making these knocks this year because we have to nitpick, right? When it's McDavid versus sure. Kucherov versus McKinnon versus Matthews, you have to get into every minute detail and find some way to take these players down. Is that his game doesn't look as explosive as, you know, McKinnon's on the ice, he's dominating. McDavid, the speed, the skill, the everything. Matthews, the scoring in so many different ways. Kucherov's game looks a lot different, but we don't appreciate it enough. Somehow, I feel like he's the most underrated superstar, and here he is hitting 100 assists, and I know we're going to hear, but he has so many points on empty net goals. When I wrote my heart story, I think it was, you know, last week, I think it was 14 to lead the league. Mm-hmm. I get it. Yes, he's a power play merchant, but he is killing it at 5-on-5 as well. I know there's some defensive lapses, and you look at that blue line, how decimated it is without Ryan McDonagh and without Sergachev yeah. most of the year. But what he's doing is so impressive. So for him to reach that mark, it just kind of solidifies it in a way that you can't take away from, right? Because he's, what, the sixth player to do that in NHL history? That's huge. The fact that we have two players doing it this year shouldn't water it down. It's just the fifth. Okay. Yeah. It makes it all the more impressive. Everything he's doing is unbelievable this season. So, you know, I think we need to hype him up every chance we get.
You know, the power play goals thing is fascinating. I once brought that up. So it was last year with a general manager, and he said, stop. Are you trying to tell me the power play goals don't count? Am I missing something here? Do power play goals not count all of a sudden in the NHL? Quick thought on Matthews yesterday. Shooting for 70. They tried to feed him all night. Early had a number of different chances, and I don't know that I've ever seen John Tavares more upset to score a goal than he did at the end of that game, where I think he was probably trying to shoot for Matthews' stick as opposed to just shooting to score, hoping to bounce one off 34's twig. But nonetheless, your thoughts on Matthews coming up one goal short?
I mean, it wasn't for a lack of trying, right? I think it was 16 shot attempts, 11 shots on goal, 9 scoring chances. Like, he did everything and more. He threw the kitchen sink at him. It's unfortunate he couldn't hit it. 69 is a nice number to land at, though. That's nothing, you know, to shrug at it. Now we can't have our 70 goals versus 100 assist conversation. But, you know, I like to see him pushing for that milestone in a game that really didn't matter. And, you know, it's a tough one because, again, the game doesn't matter that much. And everyone just wants to make sure they don't get hurt for the playoffs. But it was something nice to see. And I hope that's the energy that gets brought into the playoffs, because I'm tired of some of the narratives of the Leafs don't try hard enough and the desperation isn't there and the will over skill. Like, you go back 2 years to that Tampa Bay versus Toronto series when, you know, push came to shove, how everyone was talking about Toronto not giving that extra oomph when Tampa had that in spades. I hope that's what we see in the playoffs, because that's the narrative I need to see go away 5 minutes ago.
How do you see the Boston-Toronto series? Like, and again, like, historically, not that it means anything, and I keep reminding people this, but the fact is the fact. The Maple Leafs haven't beat the Boston Bruins in a playoff series going back to 1959.
Yeah, this is probably the closest round one series, I think. And again, I mean, if we get Vegas, Edmonton, we might have to rephrase that a little bit. But it's definitely up there, right? And for good reason. You have an elite offensive team in Toronto. Not to say Boston's bad, but and then you have the elite back end of the Bruins. The defense is sick. The goaltending tandem is the best that there is in the league. They have, you know, mismatching highlights, which is going to make the series more interesting. If it was just firepower versus firepower, that's obviously so interesting. But it's, how is the Toronto offense going to get through that Boston defense and goaltending? And it's going to make for a really, really tight series. It's kind of a coin flip for me. Mm-hmm. I think in ways, I'm not as impressed with the Bruins as I would be in most years because I don't see them dominating five-on-five play as much as maybe I'd want for a team in their position. It's not to say they haven't been good, but not at the level I kind of expect of them. And, you know, their center issues kind of make sense and maybe some scoring depth. But with the Leafs, there's a lot of uncertainty too, right? That depth scoring has been a conversation. Are we going to hear too much about the Ryan Reeves line and not be focusing on what matters? And then the goaltending. The goaltending's a little bit dicey there too. Like, Samsonov is not the starting goalie I would want. And Wohl's a very good, you know, guy to share the net with. But is it Swayman and Ullmark caliber? Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. Like, outside of Edmonton and Vegas, this one probably is going to be the closest. So watch it be a sweep one way or the other. Let me get your nickel and dime thoughts as well. You kind of blew through the Tampa Bay Lightning there. Tampa and Florida, I'll just be honest. Like, this one could be a bloodbath. Like, if there's one series that I look at, it's like, okay, like, this is going to be the old school series. We never focus enough, I feel, on how nasty/dirty Tampa can be. Really obvious that Florida's comfortable playing that style of game. If you're looking for an old school series, that's it, right?
Yeah, like, inject this series into my veins. Give me 6 or 7 games, please. I want everything and more. I don't want blowouts. I want drama, chaos, and everything. And if any series might be able to deliver it, it feels like this is the one. It's so interesting because they do have that hard, sandpapery vibes to it. And it comes from super skilled players too, right? Like, we know Kucherov can play the game a little bit dirty. We know Matthew Tkachuk's the Rat King. So that adds some fun to it before you get to those depth elements of it all.
Yeah.
But, you know, these are two teams that don't like each other, and for good reason. You see it in the regular season. We've seen it in the playoffs before. This is how rivalries are built. Yeah. It's not just proximity. It's recent playoff experience. And I'm so intrigued to see how it's going to go, because we've talked about it before. Like, it was the Florida goaltending is what cost him a series. And then you have, you know, the sweep a couple of years ago from Tampa. Like, is this the year that Florida bulldozes through them because they're such a well-built team? Like, maybe. They on paper, by the numbers, they're the deeper team. You know, their bottom six isn't going to cost them like Tampa Bay's might. Tampa has no defensive depth. But then you look at it and go, if anyone knows how to win, it's the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah.
You have elite pieces playing at an elite level. Look at Point. Look at Kucherov. Hedman looks fantastic. Vasilevsky hasn't had a great year, but you can't count him out. Look at the first year Tampa Bay won the Cup. He had an average regular season.
Yep.
Killed it in the playoffs. So you never know how this one's going to go. So I really hope it's, you know, and I want this to be a roller coaster series.
And I want 7. I'm with you. I want them, like, once upon a time, like, there was, you never wanted to miss a Los Angeles-Anaheim game just because it was so vicious. And maybe the most vicious, listen, I'll tell you, maybe the most vicious playoff series we've seen of recent notes was when the Nashville Predators went to the Stanley Cup Final, and they had that series against the Anaheim Ducks, which was just nastiness. This one has that potential as well. Now the best state rivals are finally in Florida. PWHL, let's totally turn the page here. PWHL returns. I'm not going to rub it in that Canada beat the U.S. in the championship game.
Oh, you didn't text me 2 seconds after that game-winning goal?
I couldn't resist.
I mean, I remember that.
I couldn't resist, Shayna. Like, we have that thing. Listen, last year in Brampton, I remember getting a text from you about 2 seconds after Hillary Knight scored. So you can just cool your thumbs on that one, Goldman. PWHL is back tonight. We'll see Boston and Toronto, Minnesota, Montreal as well. Questions for you now that the league starts up again after the World Championship break.
Does Boston know how to generate offense? We haven't seen it enough. We've seen, you know, Mueller kill it in the beginning of the year, and obviously they've had some injuries to deal with, but I wonder if we're going to see a little bit more scoring depth. Are they going to do a better job of getting to the middle of the ice, which I think they've struggled with a bit this year? They have so much high-end skill and star power. I want to see how that looks. Another question is how Toronto does, if they lose a game here or there, right? Because I feel like we've only seen, it's the tale of two extremes, and I want to see what they do. You know, when they face a little adversity, how do they bounce back? How do they manage one bad loss? You know, and what do they do? They don't have to go on a 5-game winning streak or a 4-game winning streak if they lose one game. But I'm really curious there because they turned it around better than anyone else. But, you know, you need a little bit more. And then I think that, you know, last spot, the playoff race is going to be interesting too, right? Ottawa, I think we all kind of counted out after they sold a little bit at the deadline. But they're still there. They are this disruptive team. It's the Carlo McLeod special. You can say the same thing about Czechia at Worlds. Like, it's just the style she brings, which I love. But you know, sometimes with them, you see this great shot suppression. They're to me, the Carolina Hurricanes of a couple years ago. You know, where's that oomph? Where's that star power taking over games? Because they're great defensively. The goaltending's hit or miss sometimes, but they're so good defensively. And then they put on shots, but they're not from the quality areas enough, and they're not finishing their chances. So I want to see what happens with them as well.
Okay, let me circle back as I finish up this conversation. The great Shannon Goldman with me from The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast. I asked Maddie this a couple of seconds ago before he came on. I'll ask you the same question. So we began by talking about the Arizona Coyotes, and it is over, done, governor's call later this afternoon, no stay of execution from the actual governor, and then this team is going to Salt Lake City. This whole thing began in 2009. Think for 1 second where you were in 2009. Give us a snapshot of Shana Goldman in 2009. Jerry Moyes is throwing the keys on the table. It ain't happening. I'm done. I'm out. What was your life? I'm encouraging all the listeners and viewers here to do the same, like, because that's how long it's been. Like, I've had an entire life, right, since 2009, and many of us have. Where were you in 2009?
I was in 10th grade. I was your average high school student. You
yeah.
know, fighting with people on the daily about Rangers and Islanders.
Yeah.
Constantly. I back then, you know, I was a big Ranger fan and watched every Islander game just so I could give it to them a little bit and know what I was talking about.
Yep.
Oh my God, that's a long time ago.
That's the thing. I keep reminding people, like, we've grown accustomed to this dysfunction. Like, it's been, yeah. It's become, you know, Maddie was saying, it's like, you know, the uncle, the drunk uncle at the party that's like, okay, it's the one family member where it's like, all right, okay, we'll just have to deal with him. But he's still part of the family. Like, that's kind of how Arizona has been in all of our hockey families here going back to 2009. Like, you think of, like, think of what you've become since then, what everybody's become since then. And Arizona has been part of that backdrop, Shayna.
Yeah, right? It's like, Arizona's dysfunction is, like, longer than the iPhone was big. You think back to 2009, everyone was big on their Blackberries and our NV2s. You know, some people still had Sidekicks back then, and now yep. Look at us. No keys on our cell phones anymore.
Amazing. Amazing perspective check. Okay, great stuff. Listen, enjoy your evening. I will find out, final playoff matches tonight, and then we'll check back regular and get your spicy takes. Oh, by the way, where are you at on WAG jackets? I wanted to ask you that one because I know, listen, we all know that, you know, one of the side hustles you have is making sweet NHL-style clothing. Where are you at on WAG jackets?
Here for them. Love them. Love to see them every year. I hope we get some things that are a little bit more inventive. Sometimes
yeah. You
see things that are a little underwhelming, like we've seen like plain blazers, but you see how teams can go all out. Credit to whoever comes up with it. Credit to the artists. It must be such an undertaking. Already we're getting like a little preview with the Boston Bruins ones. Look yep. Absolutely sick already. I know teams like Vegas have crushed it in the past, so I want to see them. I want to see bombers. I want motorcycle jackets. I want jean jackets.
Awesome.
You know, my selfish wish is a little upcycling twist and all them, but hey, I'm so here for them.
I love it. You're the best. Thanks as always for stopping by. Enjoy your night.
Thanks for having me.
Shana Goldman from The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast. We are super heavy on time, and that generally happens when I start talking with Shana. Eric Francis from Sportsnet will wrap up the Calgary Flames season. Eric Engels from Sportsnet wraps up the Montreal Canadiens season. That's coming up in hour two. Talking Flames in moments across the Sportsnet radio network, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. Merrick Show back in a moment.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Want to get right to our next guest, covering the Calgary Flames for Sportsnet. No stranger to this program and others. He is the great Eric Francis, and he joins me now. Eric, how are you?
I'm excellent, my man. How are you?
I'm good. I've been asking everybody this question. Now that it's done in Arizona, it's over, it's finished. There's the Board of Governors call. There will be the announcement at some point later on today. There's the move to Salt Lake City. This all began when Jerry Moyes took the team into bankruptcy court in 2009. It's kind of felt like a piece of furniture ever since. We're not sure how we feel about it, and we can't get rid of it. Where were you, Eric Francis, in 2009?
Well, I was here in Calgary. I was, covering the league. You're right. Ever since then, let me put it to you this way. I'm kind of giving you an end around on your question, but okay. Like every time I go to Phoenix/Tempe,
yep.
I always wonder if it's my last chance to be there on company coin.
Yeah.
Because I heard you guys talking earlier. Yes, it has become, you know, it's just it's a comfortable problem that the league's had forever. And yeah. You kind of assumed that it was just always going to be there.
Yeah.
But we also always knew that at any point in time, listen, it seemed like for many, many years, the only guy in the world who wanted it to stay there was Gary Bettman. And he kept insisting that it could work. And I do think it will work one day. Once they get a building built and they go back there.
I agree.
I think it'll be great.
I agree.
And I look forward to that those days. But in the meantime, listen, I remember having conversations with Gary Bettman back to when the Calgary Flames were doing an SOS campaign. This is way, way back,
mm-hmm.
like 28 years ago. And Gary always said this to whenever I'd call him to say, hey, I hear Calgary Flames maybe moving to Houston or, you know, mm-hmm. there are all these rumors and such. He'd say, listen, I'm never moving a franchise as long as they have the three pillars. The first thing is an owner. You have to have an owner, a competent owner.
Yep.
I think he added the word competent, but anyway, you have to have an owner that everybody's agreeable to.
Yes.
You also, then the second thing is you have to have a building. And the third thing is you have to have a fan base. If those are not there, then there's no reason to have a franchise. But, you know, and in Phoenix, you wondered for years about, there were times when we worried about all three of those things. So
true.
Good on the league for finally acting on it. They obviously have an owner in Salt Lake City that they're excited about, who's proven to be competent and who has stability and had stability and has the ability to turn this thing around quickly and acquire this team. It is. I watched that last night against Edmonton. I was sad. Well, how couldn't you be sad for that fan base?
Yeah.
You know, I joked earlier in the week, I'm devastated at losing trips to Tempe every year. I can only imagine how the fans feel. So it's too bad. And it's also too bad because I told, you know, you get people, Jeff, you must get this all the time. People ask you all the time, if I could go on one road trip in the NHL, you know, where's the best place to go see a game?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I always say it's a toss-up between Nashville and Vegas, and I'm not even sure who's in third. But in light of the intimacy of Mullet Arena, I changed all that for the last couple of years and said, you're crazy if you don't go watch a game in Mullet Arena while you have the chance. The worst seat in the house is 18 rows up.
Yep.
It's just the greatest place to watch an NHL game, probably since the Calgary Corral.
Oh, wow.
there's a reach.
You're going to say San Jose with the Cow Palace or something, but you went Corral. I love that, Eric. Thanks. That's great. Okay, well, we'll get out the Coyotes page here. And again, this will be made official. We strongly suspect at some point today. So I got to tell you, listen, you're there to document all of it, whether it's, you know, the games, the practices, the conversations, the editorial, everything all around it. When you look back at this Calgary Flames season, I think a lot of us, myself included, had no idea what to expect. I didn't know how this season was going to go for the Calgary Flames. Optimistically, I thought they had a chance of, if things broke correctly, a shot at making the playoffs. But how do you look at this year's Calgary Flames team? And then the obvious sidebar to all of that is, how do you evaluate Craig Conroy's rookie season as general manager?
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought they had a chance of making the playoffs. And I actually think they did have a chance of making the playoffs until they traded those last two cornerstones of the franchise. You know, how to sum up the season? Well, they finally ripped the Band-Aid off is kind of the way I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for years, this team's kind of patchworked together. Oh, let's add one more piece that we think will kind of make the difference and make us a playoff team to the detriment of their long-term, you know, building. So I think this year they finally, Craig Conroy has decided, you know what, it's time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of forced into it because of the five guys they traded this year that were all really important veterans to this team. They all wanted, I don't want to say they all wanted out. They all weren't interested in signing long-term.
Right.
And he had said from day one in his press conference, anybody who doesn't want to be here, I don't want them here either. And, this city doesn't need to make any apologies for itself, this franchise. If guys don't want to buy in and be here, that's fine. There are lots of guys who would like to be here. So he traded them out. The youth movement begins. Mm-hmm. And I dare say that of the five main guys who they traded, and we're talking about Toffoli, Zadorov, Lindholm, we're talking about Hanifin.
Tanev and Hanifin.
Of those five guys, I would say that Craig Conroy did really, really well on at least four of them. And I would argue that in all five of them, because the one that people questioned was Zadorov. They got a third and a fifth rounder for Zadorov. Well, I think it's been proven in Vancouver. He's just a ho-hum third-pairing defenseman. So a third to fifth for him is pretty good. So how did he do? I think he did great. I think there's short-term pain, but I think long-term there'll be plenty of gain, and there's lots of things to show for it this year in terms of youngsters who are already showing that they belong in the NHL. Connor Zeri, Martin Pospisil. A lot of really good things have come out of this season. And I tell you, this fan base, despite the fact that there's a clear rebuild, retool on the way, they couldn't be more excited about this team moving forward, I tell you that.
Let me ask you about Pospisil specifically, because as you well know, everybody's getting to know his name, Eric, and this started even in preseason. Like, it's always good when you have a player on your team that is hated around the rest of the league. Like, we think about, like, the obvious one this year is Matt Rempe, right? With the New York Rangers. Yeah. Like, that name got established. We're pretty close, and a lot of it is just, like, borderline hits here in a game that's almost forgotten that it is physical and it is violent and it is dangerous. Martin Pospisil seems as if he's single-handedly trying to remind everybody how dangerous hockey is. Agree, disagree?
Yeah, well put. You know, and I think it's so fascinating that you mentioned Matt Rempe in the same conversation, a good Calgary kid, because I keep drawing the illusion between the two as well. Like, Matt Rempe has to keep fighting and has to keep hitting everything that moves.
Yep.
Or he's not in the NHL. He doesn't get to pursue his lifelong dream. Same goes for Martin Pospisil. He has to play on the edge, or he's not a National Hockey League player.
Mm.
And he played on the edge quite well, I think, all year long. Obviously, he made some mistakes. When you live on the edge, you're going to go over it sometimes. I do think he's borderline reckless at times. But I'll also argue that he's the most exciting player in the Calgary Flames. He's one of the biggest fan favorites here.
Yeah.
He's worth the price of admission because he's going to go out and hit six or seven guys every single game. And in the no-hit league, that's a really nice departure from the norm, in my opinion. So, yeah, I heard you talk about two or three weeks ago after his latest close call. He didn't get suspended for his last one.
But I
thought he should. Yeah, I thought he should have. And I think the only reason he didn't get a suspension is because he got kicked out of the game early in the second period. I usually take that into consideration. And the procedure that the referees used was wrong. They actually were not allowed to review that play and turn it into a major. So I think they factored all that in and gave him. But I bet he got a phone call saying, listen, son, you dodged one here.
Yeah.
And he's really got to watch it. But I think we'll be talking about him a lot over the next several years.
I agree, and that's the what we're talking about here is a hit on Josh Morrissey of the Winnipeg Jets a couple of weeks ago. Okay, let me conclude on this one. First of all, loved your piece with Mikhail Grabowski. I'm biased. He's a neighbor of mine. I love it. I love reading anytime Grabo speaks. But this is a conversation all about what I would look at and saying in his rookie season, one of the signature trades that Craig Conroy made, and that was Toffoli for Yegor Sharangovich. And I know there was a lot of skepticism around Calgary about, hold on a second, what are we getting here? Toffoli's an established goal scorer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. 30 goals later, that looks to be a home run deal for the Calgary Flames and Craig Conroy. How do people in the organization, how do fans feel about Yegor Sharangovich?
Oh, yeah, that was a home run. It wasn't well received at first by some people, but they knew at the very least they got younger.
Yep.
And they had a guy with a world-class shot who, if he got the right opportunities or was put with the right person, he could finish a lot. He's got, 31 goals right now. So, yeah, a real win for the Calgary Flames, especially considering Toffoli, was not going to re-sign with the team and needed to be traded because he wanted out. So, the Calgary Flames also got a draft pick in that trade. I think it was the second round.
Third round.
Third rounder, and the kid they drafted, a Russian kid, had a phenomenal season his first year in college this year. And Craig Conroy left the draft last year happier with that draft pick than I think any pick he made. He wanted that kid so bad. So I think there's more to it than just those two guys. But, yeah, that was a home run for sure. And Sharon Govich has been quite a revelation because 10 games in, they had him on the fourth line. They weren't really sure what to do with him.
Yeah.
And I honestly got to tell you, there are people here, I'm not even sure we thought he was still going to stay in the league. But he found his way. He's a shy guy, and he eventually found his way. And 30 goals later, he's one of the biggest stories of the year for the Flames.
Excellent. Real quick, in about 45 seconds, if you can do it, what do we look for tonight? Calgary Flames, San Jose Sharks.
Dustin Wolf will get the start. It looks like, you know, the debate all summer long would be, you know, has Markstrom played his last game as a Flame? We may get some light shed on that tomorrow on garbage bag day.
Yep.
Other than that, this game is completely meaningless. I was shocked he wanted to be on the show because the Flames have kind of been in the shadows ever since the trade deadline ended, and we knew their day in the spotlight would end. They were in the spotlight for a good 2 or 3 months this year.
For sure.
And once the trade deadline ended, all the sexiness of the team kind of went out the window for a while, and hopefully we'll hear from you next year at various times.
You're the best. Eric, thanks as always for this. Great job this season covering the Calgary Flames, as always. We'll check back.
Thanks, my buddy. Enjoy the playoffs. Can't wait.
Thanks, man. It should be a lot of fun. Eric Francis covers the Calgary Flames at Sportsnet. And he's been our go-to. And the rebuild very much is on in Calgary and Matty. I know you like players. I mean, it's hard not to, even though he does sort of, you know, he cracks some eggs every now and then when you make an omelet. I know you like Martin Pospisil and how he plays.
Of course I do. That's how players like that help you. What's the line? There are players that get you there and help, and players
Mark
that
Bergevin,
get you through.
Mark Bergevin would always say there are players that get you there and there are players that get you through.
And he hasn't obviously been in that position where he's going to get you through, but that feels like a type of player that is going to get you through. I like him. And I know he pisses off a lot of people, which is why I like him even more.
It's okay. That's there's nothing wrong with that.
By the way, that player that that Eric was talking about was Aydar Sunyev.
Mm-hmm. How was the season?
He was drafted out of Penticton of the BCHL.
With the V's.
And he just finished up a season with UMass Amherst, 25 points in 36 games as a freshman.
Nice job.
Kale McCarr's school.
So listen, I know it was a tough season for the Calgary Flames. I get it. I did think that they had a shot at the beginning of the year. Again, it would necessitate some players getting re-signed and not getting traded. But did you not think that at the beginning of the year, if everything stayed relatively calm and maybe one of or both Tanev and Hanifin re-signed, and there was that major contract that was on the table for Hanifin for the longest time, and it was there, and then the conversation was there, and then the conversation was gone, and will he, won't he, and obviously everything happened the way that it happened, but I thought they had a shot at the playoffs. So everything stayed together.
They were right there for the majority of the season until they traded away those guys.
Yeah.
That's the fact. They were in a playoff spot for a large portion of the first half of the season.
The other thing now to watch with the Calgary Flames is the obvious one. We didn't have enough time to talk to Eric about this. What is the Jacob Markstrom question?
Yeah.
And is it only a matter of time before he becomes a member of the New Jersey Devils? We shall take the summer and wait for the answer on that one. Meanwhile, time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local, Maddie.
It's the Oilers at the Avalanche. I was trying to find a game to watch tonight, and there is a reason to watch this one, folks.
Okay,
not only because it's on our station, but we'll keep going.
All right,
Avs minus 1.5. The Avs are 6-1 straight up in their last 7 against the Oilers in Colorado, and 7-2 straight up in their last 9 overall against the Oilers. Nathan MacKinnon, 6 points behind Nikita Kucherov for the Art Ross.
Yeah.
If there's ever a player that I could see going to Rhino mode for 6 points in a meaningless game for the Edmonton Oilers, which is just get out of the barn healthy.
Yeah.
Nathan MacKinnon's that guy.
Can I just sort of opine on one thing that I really miss in the NHL and have for a couple of years now? My favorite player, Gabriel Landeskog. Yeah. And he gets out and he skates and Bednar keeps saying, not close. Not close, and he skates, and then he gets off before the rest of the team gets on. There's something in the back of my mind. Again, I'm just hoping. This is not based on any information whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I have no information on this. I'm just hoping that, Maddie, there's a miracle comeback, or maybe Colorado's withholding something, and we see Gabriel Landeskog.
Teams withholding information? Never. Could never happen, Jeff.
I miss Landeskog in the NHL. That's Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local, tour around the NHL. And you're going to hear, if you haven't already, the wonderful speech, the sign-off yesterday by Todd Walsh, broadcaster for the Arizona Coyotes. You're going to want to stick around and listen to this one. Also, Eric Engels on the Habs season. Keep it here.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Okay, welcome to Hour 2. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk to Eric Engels of Sportsnet.ca about the Montreal Canadiens season, highlighted by a couple of different things here. Nick Suzuki continues to demonstrate that one day he is going to win the Selke Trophy and will be an impact player for the Montreal Canadiens when they actualize as a legit good team that makes the playoffs consistently. And Jiří Slafkovský had a wonderful season for the Montreal Canadiens. Probably, Maddie, no coincidence that a lot of it took off when he played with Nick Suzuki. That is a conversation for Eric, and we'll have that coming up at the bottom.
He's a bust.
Of the hour.
Remember all that? He's
he
a
can't
bust.
Play. Bust.
He sucks.
First yeah, okay. year, get him to Laval, trade him for parts. Slafkovsky's yeah. fine.
Good one.
Slafkovsky is more than just fine. You know what? As is Shane Wright, who in that last go around with the Seattle Kraken looked fantastic.
Look like an NHL player?
Look like an NHL yeah, player, and it's going to be him and Beniers up the gut for a number of years. Discuss amongst yourselves who's center one and who's center two. Okay, let me ask you something here.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get to Todd Walsh, and I really hope you can stick around to hear and watch Todd Walsh's sign-off yesterday after the Arizona Coyotes' final game at Mullet Arena. Actually, final game.
Period.
So, Mike McIntyre tweeting out, projected NHL lineup tonight for the Winnipeg Jets of Manitoba, this per Rick Bonus. What stands out for you? Okay. Ehlers, Monahan, Toffoli.
Mm-hmm.
Iafallo, Lambert. Brad Lambert called up, by the way. Gabe Vilardi. Niederreiter, Gustafson, Appleton. Perfetti, Kupari, and Nikita Chibrikov. Congratulations playing his first game tonight as well. Jets are playing the Canucks tonight, by the way. Anything stand out there?
I mean,
tell me you don't like a player without telling me you don't like a player.
Listen, I know that the Jeff Merrick Show has become the Cole Perfetti
fan club.
Yeah,
I know.
But the guy's got 17 goals, doesn't play a lot, and somehow
with
no Kyle Connor, no Mark Scheifele. Who else isn't in the lineup there? No Adam Lowry. He still is playing on the fourth line.
Kupari and Chibrikov.
And then no disrespect to the other two players. But come on. You're right. Tell me you don't like a player without telling me you don't like a player. It's pretty simple.
Some of the tweets have been interesting on that one as well.
And it's the last, like, this is the best part for me.
Yeah.
The game means nothing.
Yeah, but you know what? I get it. Like, this is the one where, like, okay, maybe throw him a bone or something like that. The only problem with all of it, and I know it does, like, I'm accused of being, you know, the fan of the leading cheerleader for the Gabriel Landeskog fan club. That's true.
Yeah.
Cole Perfetti.
No shame in
that's
that.
That's true. You know, Shane Wright, like, that's all true. Like, I'll admit, I'll cop to it. But again, I've told you before, I don't cheer for teams. I cheer for players. And by Nick Suzuki, there's another one I just mentioned, like, by now, if you've listened to me long enough, either on this show, the old Hockey Central at Noon show, the old Leafs Lunch show, like, you know who my favorites are. Like, by this time, you've probably clued in. Cole Perfetti's one of them. The complicating thing with all of it, and I don't know where this Perfetti situation is marching towards. Like, who knows? Hopefully it doesn't happen, but if there are injuries for the Winnipeg Jets, he is the first person going in that spot. He's a top six guy. He should be playing top six. Top six is really tough to crack for the Winnipeg Jets. And also, listen, I'm not unaware of any of this. The team's winning. And the team's playing great. And they can't find a spot here for Cole Perfetti, which really sucks.
However,
for that player.
However,
yes.
What is the one thing that plagues this team that we have the biggest concern about going into the playoffs?
Goals.
And what does Cole Perfetti do?
Yeah, he scores
goals. Yeah, he scores goals. So, I don't know.
I know. I get it.
Some things are not so obvious to people, I guess.
You know what? One of the reasons why I like having Goldman on the show, Shayna Goldman, is...
she's great. And when she's a star, she'll bring you on her show.
Hopefully, yes. When she's a star somewhere, send for me. the thing about Goldman is I love having conversations with people when obvious generation gaps happen, and it just sort of reminds you about your life.
Yeah.
Like, what went through your head, Maddie, when, because I'm asking this question of everybody today, where were you in 2009? The reason 2009 is particularly salient today is 2009 was when former Phoenix Coyotes owner Jerry Moyes started this entire domino process by throwing the keys on the table and taking the Coyotes to bankruptcy court. And everybody freaked out and thought that, uh-oh, someone's going to take the Phoenix Coyotes away through bankruptcy court. And the whole thing hit its final crescendo, the end of the symphony, yesterday in a win against the Edmonton Oilers for trivia people. The final goal of Arizona Coyotes history scored by Sean Durzi. But the whole thing began in 2009. So I'm asking people, where were you in your life in 2009 when all this began? Because Arizona, the Coyotes, have become part of furniture that we haven't been able to deal with going back to 2009. You probably have something in your house or your apartment or your condo, whatever. It's a piece of furniture that's just been around, and you either haven't gotten around to getting rid of it, haven't wanted to get rid of it, maybe there's an emotional attachment, or it's still kind of okay and it still kind of fits, and well, we're just going to continue to leave it there. It's kind of been Arizona in a lot of ways. But when Goldman said, because when I asked you that question, you said, well, I was 20 years old and still playing hockey. What went through your head when Goldman said, who's smarter than all of us, by the way, yeah, I was in grade 10. Oh, grade 10. Sorry, I apologize. Yeah, grade 10.
Yeah, I felt old at that point. I'm like, oh, grade 10 was so long ago for me. Actually, so I thought about it. That was the first year I went to college, 2009. Started on this path.
Yeah. And what did you think this path was going to lead you to?
Not here.
A schmuck like me?
Not here.
I got to hang out with Bob McCowan for a lot of years, man.
Oh, you say it like you haven't been in this business for a long time. Stop it.
No, but you got to hang out with the master.
He was pretty good. He was pretty good.
Just as an aside, and I've always said this about Bob McCowan. We'll get back to hockey. One point I always want to make about Bob McCowan. I've never seen or heard a broadcaster who was more comfortable with silence than Bob McCowan.
Yeah. People freak about that.
It's in this industry, and I'm guilty of it too. In this industry, people behind microphones aren't really comfortable with this. Because they think that automatically when they do this, people will change and they'll go somewhere else. And they want to just sort of create this sort of like Phil Spector wall of sound. And they feel obliged to do that. McCowan was comfortable enough in his own skin that he could allow silence to work for what he was saying. How many times were you producing a show and there would be like a long gap of silence? And that's because he wanted the gravity of what he said to be absorbed by his listeners and not just this like,
constant
spray gun of sound.
Yeah, he did it often. It was the pregnant pause, right?
He was the best.
And it was done for effect.
Yeah, he was the best.
It was done in the middle to, and in a lot of cases, to emphasize a point.
Yeah.
I'll give you a quick, just about the brilliance of that and his the way his brain worked. We had Frank DeFord on the show one day. Frank DeFord had just written another book. This is like more of a biography. And at this point, Bob wouldn't read the whole book, but he would read parts of it and then ask questions along. And he asks Frank DeFord, were you a big A.A. Milne fan growing up? And Frank DeFord's like, yeah. And he says, why do you ask that? He says, because you started each chapter the same way A.A. Milne did.
No way.
Frank DeFord didn't even know he did it.
Yeah.
And it's giving me chills right now just saying that. So it was pretty incredible. Cool. But the pregnant pause is one thing that, I mean, they tell you that in broadcasting school.
Okay. Back to
hockey. Another broadcaster, actually.
Todd Walsh. So want to play this in its entirety. Like Maddie and I talked about, maybe we just, you know, cut up a couple of clips here and some of the more interesting points or points of interest in what Todd Walsh did last night during his sign off. Now, Todd Walsh is synonymous with Arizona Coyotes hockey. How many times have we all seen, no matter which Arizona Coyotes player it was, Todd Walsh was the one that welcomed them to the Arizona Coyotes, and it became sort of a rite of passage. As you became a Coyote, you did the Todd Walsh interview. So I think we're all wondering sort of who was going to put the punctuation on this yesterday. And I know a lot of people got pretty emotional hearing Shane Doan talk, rightfully so, about the Arizona / Phoenix Coyotes. And I thought it was a really nice touch that that one fan saved his banner from the old barn and presented it to him. And I think Shane Doan was pretty taken back and surprised by that. So a lot of people got a lot pretty emotional hearing Shane Doan talk. Why not? He's synonymous with the organization. And interestingly, as he pointed out a couple of times, he was there, his first year when the Winnipeg Jets moved to Arizona, and then his son playing in the last year of the Arizona Coyotes as they moved to Salt Lake City. There is going to be a discussion somewhere down the road. Maybe we can have it in a second here about what do you do with the Arizona Coyotes records now? But pause on that. Todd Walsh, longtime broadcaster with the Arizona Coyotes, kind of, Maddie, delivered one for the ages and showed you how to handle a sign-off with grace. Whatever you're doing right now, just take 5 minutes and just stop, right? And if you're driving, maybe pull over so you can allow this to just sink in. We talked about the Bob McCown pregnant pause, the time to, like, allow what he's saying to sink in. This is Todd Walsh, an excellent broadcaster, really decent human being, showing you how to handle a sign-off with grace. Here's Todd Walsh.
But I do want to say this. I've been thinking about what I'm about to say for a long time. I never dreamt that I'd be saying it under these circumstances, however, although I feared it. And this will be said in lieu of an ode to the Coyotes that we have done so many times over the years. I'm going to simplify things, and in a moment, we're just going to get to a chalkboard. An old school chalkboard. But first, I want to tell you a short story. In the summer of 1996, I was working at a rock station here in town, 93.3 KDKB, on the rock and roll ride home. Essentially, I got to listen to rock and roll, interview rock stars, and go to rock concerts and get paid for that and do a couple of sportscasts. But I always felt like, and I think I knew, that I had something more to give. And that summer, my life changed forever because my general manager walked into the production room where I was editing something with a grease pencil, a razor blade, and some tape. His name is Chuck Artigue. He was the general manager. He has long since passed. But he walked in and said, "You're not going to believe this. We just cut a deal. You know that hockey team that's coming from Winnipeg? They want to do something totally different. They want to change the whole paradigm of broadcasting. There's a new television network coming to town. That was Fox Sports Arizona. And he wanted to put his hockey games on a rock station on FM. And I said to Chuck, "That's great for us." And then he said, "Hey, and we have that AM signal, 1060 KUKQ. We can do the pre- and post-game shows." And I said, "That's great for us." And then he said, "And we want you to be a part of it." And I looked at him and I said, "Are you asking me or are you telling me?" And then I paused and said, "But if we're going to do this, we got to do this right. First of all, I don't want to be stuck in a studio tossing it to the guys at the rink for the rest of my life or taking phone calls late into the night. I'd already done that. But I said, we have to be committed. These will be hockey pioneers. We got to tell their story. We got to be embedded with them. We got to go out on the road, be on the charter flight, the team bus, and the team hotels." And they bit. On December 14th, I stood in front of Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto in 1996. The Coyotes won 5-2. Keith Tkachuk scored 2 goals. Jeremy Roenick had 1. They had 58 penalty minutes, and I've been on the road covering this team ever since. And I will say this, it's not about goals and moments and memories that are about what I saw. What I have learned along the way in the last 3 decades, that hockey is about people. And they are amongst the best people in the world. Personally speaking, in 2000, when my father died, I couldn't afford a trip to New York the next morning after he passed on a Sunday, but it was my broadcast partner, Tom Curvers, who showed up at the airport and handed me 50,000 flight miles and said, "Go home." 15 years later, when my mom died in Rochester, New York, I went back to collect all of her belongings, and I got a text. I was all alone in that house. You can imagine that feeling. You may have lived it. Teppo Numminen texted me. He was a member of the Buffalo Sabres, and he said, "I just got on the New York State Thruway. We're having breakfast in Rochester. I don't want you to be alone." That's what hockey is all about. And hockey gave me a personal and professional purpose. And I don't know how to thank it, so I'm going to thank it right now. I wrote once that a good story lasts forever. However, sometimes the ending just isn't what you want it to be. It is up to us to figure out the joy of the story, no matter how it ended. That's why we want to read and feel more of them. That's why people continue to write. What I said earlier, I'll always remember, if you're good to the game will be good to you. So in closing, I'm going to go back to a story that I love to tell. It's about the Hall of Fame coach, the late, great Fred Shero, back in the mid-70s, the head coach of the Broad Street Bullies, the Philadelphia Flyers. He walked into the room before the Stanley Cup clinching game, and he walked up on a chalkboard, and he wrote this. It's my favorite quote in all of hockey. Win today, and we walk together forever. Think about that. Win today, and we walk together forever. Well, the Coyotes, as you know, they never won a cup, but we went through a whole heck of a lot together. So I'd like to amend that chalkboard with a virtual chalkboard circa 2024 as I got a couple of guys to moonlight, Tom Elsner and Josh Kelman, who put this together. And this is my message to you, Coyote fans who have been there since day one. And it's simply this. I hope you'll enjoy this particular last ode to the Coyotes from my own chalkboard. Because we walk together forever as Coyote fans. And that's the story, really. That's my chalkboard. Had the best seat in the house. We all did here on this crew. We enjoyed the ride, and we hoped you did too. And I'm going to quote a song from a band, The Association. The song is Everything That Touches You. And they sang, our love is real, and we show the feel. And we have done that for 28 years. So Godspeed to all that were involved and who invested in Arizona Coyotes hockey.
That is a great Todd Walsh, and that Matt Marchese is a reminder of how to handle something with grace. That was beautiful by Todd Walsh, a wonderful broadcaster with some beautiful words.
It was, and there were a lot, and these are the types of people that you think of in these situations, right? The people that have been there, that have been through all of it, those are the people that today are wondering what their future is and what happens, right?
There are 31, I think it's 31 people in the organization that are without contract next year that don't know what's happening with them.
Yeah.
Like, the players are going to be fine. The players are going to go. And, you know, that's essentially what Ryan Smith is purchasing here, because the IP stays in Arizona with the soon-to-be former owner, Alex Morello. But it's a lot of people that are without contracts. There's a few other things that I want to just mention here about this situation. No hockey team exists in a vacuum. There are ripple effects. And there are things that hockey teams do that affect the community. And one of the things we always think about when it comes to hockey teams is the youth hockey programs around them.
Yeah.
Right. There are you think of like all the great work that the Nashville Predators have done, for example. And I got an eyeball full of this at various tournaments that my kids have been part of in the States. They've done tremendous work in the Nashville community, and you know the Junior Preds program is outstanding. My oldest son has played against the Junior Hurricanes, and you want to talk about producing an elite level program? Played against them at Lake Placid, and you talk about creating, you know, youth hockey programs that are able to compete at the top levels around North America. All of these centers have done it.
Yeah.
All of these U.S. non-traditional centers, all of them have done it. And the Arizona Coyotes are no different. And certainly we think about Austin Matthews. That's the obvious one. And we think about Matthew Nyes. You know, interesting with Austin Matthews and watching Louis DeBrusk on the panel last night, I can't help but thinking back to something that Louis and I talked about years ago. And that is, you know, once upon a time, there was a team in Arizona as part of the Junior Coyotes program that had a line that featured, ready for this one? Austin Matthews, Jake DeBrusk, Brendan Lemieux.
Kind of good.
That was
kind of good.
You want to talk about a team with some talent, some toughness, some skill, like all of it that happened through Arizona. So a couple of things that a lot of people are concerned about, and I've heard from a number of people, and I've heard from parents as well, that wonder what the future is of two specific programs. The Arizona Kachinas is the girls hockey program that runs in Arizona. The Junior Coyotes is the boys hockey program. There's a lot of ex-NHLers that are involved in that program. Derek Morris, for example. Brendan Burke, Sean Burke's son, a lot of ex-NHLers that are involved there. And that organization has been subsidized by the Arizona Coyotes, who are soon to be no more. What happens to these two programs? I think Lindsey Fry has taken over the Kachinas full-time. I'm not 100% sure. We'll see what happens with the Junior Coyotes. But these are two wildly successful programs. And these are two youth hockey programs that a lot of people in the state of Arizona are taking a lot of pride in, and for good reason. I believe the U14s just won a national championship.
Wow, that's impressive.
So as that team leaves, and we mentioned the people that won't be going along with the team to Salt Lake City, there are people that have roots really deep now in Arizona that go back to day one of the Coyotes that can't leave.
Yeah.
There are people in and around the organization that won't be wanted on the voyage, and now they're wondering what's next for me. And think about the youth hockey as well in the area. These are two wildly successful programs that we hope continue, we hope thrive, because they are continuing to make that next generation of hockey player, both at the men's and women's, the boys and girls level. And there are leagues for both now. And both have been tremendous. And I hope that those continue and continue to thrive. That's what I think about here.
Yeah, and it's a good point. I mean, even to a lesser extent, like the arena that they were playing out of was in large part because of the hockey market in Arizona. Arizona State does not exist as an NCAA hockey program without the Coyotes. It doesn't.
And now it's a destination. Like, yeah. ASU is...
It's a spot. And so, but the youth hockey specifically, I mean, you mentioned it. Look at the players that it's produced. Oh, yeah. There is a market for this. They've had success there. They will be back when, we don't know. But it's a sad day, Jeff. And think about it, like, I've never personally gone through. I mean, as a Buffalo Bills fan, there was talk about the Bills at one point being sold, maybe to, you know, a group, bring it to Toronto. Mm-hmm. And from my personal perspective, I didn't want that. I didn't want that team here.
You didn't want the Bills in Toronto. You're a huge Bills fan. You didn't want them in Toronto.
Did not. Honestly, I don't, because I don't think this is a football market. But I look at it and say, like, I've also been to or in and around Orchard Park on a Sunday and on a Monday when there's no football.
How many tables have you gone through?
Yeah, I haven't gone through one yet. Right. My wife's like, you're an idiot if you do that. But to me, like, it's part of the fabric of that city, which is, and for this fan base, they don't have that anymore. Like, they're going to have the Cardinals. They're going to have the Diamondbacks. The hockey team's not going to exist there anymore. And for the fan base that's been through all of this, for it to just kind of go poof up in smoke like that,
it's tough.
And I feel for them.
The closest thing that I can compare it to, because as much as I was a huge Blue Jays fan growing up and always have been, you know, I'm old enough to remember when they debuted. And I worked for Versa Foods selling hot dogs and Jumbo Cokes, the Blue Jays games back in 85. The Expos leaving was tough.
Sure.
Expos leaving was harsh, man. Like that, but that was the closest thing I ever got to it, to having a team that I followed and a team that I loved. I was a huge fan of Tim Raines and Warren Cromartie and the Hawk. I loved Andre Dawson and Gary Carter, all of them. And to watch them leave, that was gut punch. But it wasn't the city that I lived in. And I always think of like that emotional sports scar that gets left when your team just sort of – Winnipeggers know this. Like anyone from Winnipeg watching or listening, they know exactly what I'm talking about. You're like a lot of markets understand that. Okay, so we're awaiting, you know, the official word here that the Arizona Coyotes have been sold and will be moved to Salt Lake City. Again, as I mentioned, NHL Board of Governors conference call, Zoom call, whatever it is, going to happen later on this afternoon. We expect some type of announcement after that. Pause on that for a second. I know it's absorbed a lot of the oxygen on the program today. I get it. Let me bring a smile to your face.
Okay.
So I get a note here from the great San Jose Sharks play-by-play voice, Randy Hahn.
Yes, sir.
So Randy says, he was listening to the Eric Francis interview a couple of seconds ago as I threw out as one of the last questions. What do we look forward to here tonight between the Calgary Flames and the San Jose Sharks? So Randy submits, our colleague, the great Eric Francis, is wrong. There's a massive story here tonight. For the first time in NHL history,
okay,
two Bay Area-born goaltenders will face one another.
Oh, nice.
Devin Cooley, Los Gatos, versus Dustin Wolf, Gilroy. It's a huge showdown in the Stampede City. Now, excellent. Thank you for that one, Randy, and good reminder. And it also reminds us something we just talked about with the Arizona Coyotes.
Youth hockey in a non-traditional
youth
market.
Youth hockey in non-traditional markets. And tonight, it is the duel of the two Bay Area goaltenders. And I'm guessing young Matty Marchese, because certainly young Jeff Merrick, never would have thought that we would see that.
No chance. I mean, I remember growing up, and I guess I would have been minor midget, so 16. Yeah. We played in the Toronto Marlies tournament, and that year, that was that really good Marlies team. They played against the California Wave.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first realization, like, hockey exists outside of, you know, the traditional market. They went to the final. The game went to, like, triple overtime. They missed their flight. They had to get late flights out. It was around Christmas time. So that was my first. But then I don't know of any guys that made it off that team. So you're kind of just like, okay, it was maybe it was a one-off and whatever.
Yeah.
But now you see it. Here's my question to you.
What's up?
When do we stop calling these non-traditional hockey markets now?
Yeah, I can. Yesterday.
Right? Like,
because they're producing an... But here's the thing. It takes at least a generation to get someone to the NHL.
Sure it does. And I think with what these markets are, we just talked about Arizona and what they've produced. Look at what California's producing. St. Louis.
Florida, Texas.
Florida, Texas.
Columbus.
And some of those would be considered, quote unquote, traditional hockey markets, I guess, now. But I think we're done with that. Like, a non-traditional hockey market right now is like Alaska.
What are you talking about? How can you say Alaska?
In terms of like, they don't. There's hockey there, but it's
and there
not,
has been for years.
But it's not the same. Like it's you know like
I think
you're
gonna say like I think you say like Mexico City.
Okay, how about Idaho? Is that better? I actually played against the Mexican men's national team. Believe it or not.
Did you really?
Yeah.
How was it?
We won 2 games.
Convincingly?
No.
They gave you a fight.
A lot of them were from Florida, actually.
Circling back, and I don't want to read it out, but Randy just gave me what his opening is going to be for tonight's game for the San Jose Sharks broadcast. It's a good one.
There's no surprise will have a good one.
It's a really good one. Hey. Again, Bay Area goaltenders tonight, Devin Cooley from Los Gatos against Dustin Wolf from Gilroy.
Hey, do you want to do this MVP thing? So a peek behind the curtain for people out there.
MVP thing.
We talk about things during the break, believe it or not. And I was stunned to get an email from a team.
Okay. Oh, yeah. This is good. I like
the
this.
So this is from the Tampa Bay Lightning. Brian Breesman's their PR guy there. He's great. And he sent out this note, and it's not just to me, so I'm not important. It's a group message. It's a big email. But it's the case for Cooch.
Love it.
For MVP. By the numbers gives a whole list of things. And he points out in one of the things, Nikita Kucherov, the biggest point disparity between first and second place on his team.
Is that a shot at Braden Point?
No, it can't be. The guy scored over 40 goals. 54 points.
Yep.
The next closest, Panarin and Pasternak over Trocheck and Marchand, 43 points.
Yeah, Wyshynski's got a column about this as well. We talked to Greg yesterday at ESPN.com outlining essentially the case for, to that point, the case for Kuch, the case for Nikita Kucherov. First of all, just the phenomenon of teams doing this, I think, is fantastic. A couple of years ago, the Los Angeles Kings did a really good job and put together some really impressive packages and sent them out to members of the media, hyping up Anze Kopitar for the Selke.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading it and leafing through it. And like anything else, like you're just trying to influence the voters, right? Like, I'm still wrestling. I'm still going back. I'm going to sit down. I got to find some time tonight. So we had to do another podcast, me and Elliot, to finalize my ballot, which I have to submit by tomorrow. I am still back and forth.
It's like studying for an exam, eh?
It's even worse because I keep changing what my answer is going to be here.
Select C,
like,
Jeff.
Well, like I threw in my notes. Like, if you ask me who I have for the Hart Trophy, make sure you ask me 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
Because it's gonna be different.
The numbers on Kucherov, I mean, they're staggering to begin with. But when you look at, like, and thank you, Brian, for providing the content for the show today. 54 assists on the road.
Thank you for providing the propaganda, Brian.
Yeah. 54 assists on the road. That's the most since Gretzky in 1991.
Yeah.
75 road points, 15 more than the next closest skater.
Did Brian include the power play production for one Nikita Kucherov?
He did.
And how much is that value more than 5-on-5?
53 power play points. Tied for first in even strength points with 91.
Yeah.
Listen, it's, I said this to somebody the other day, like each one of the, I think it's three, each one of the three that I think will be 1, 2, 3 by the end.
Yeah.
They all have something that's very intriguing about their specific case. Now, McDavid's has changed a little bit because Kucherov also has 100 assists.
Mm-hmm.
So if he was the only one, you're like, well, he got 100 assists. He got 100, but now somebody else got it. So you're like, well, that kind of pushes Kucherov ahead. But Nathan MacKinnon's got a great case. That home scoring streak that he had was remarkable. The fact that for my money, he's the best all-around player in the game right now.
McKinnon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think he can do things that McDavid can't and Kucherov won't.
Those things are physical.
Physical, yes. Yeah. But that's part of the package. And so I think it's going to be tough. I do think it's going to be Kucherov, but I don't think it's... I think Kucherov has kind of paced himself ahead of these guys a little bit over the past couple of weeks, or at least week and a half, which is such a weird thing to say because it's an award for the entire season and not the last week and a half. But it's an incredible... It just speaks to how incredible this regular season has been. It's been a really great regular season, and I know you love this, or maybe you don't. I think you do.
What's up?
All the drama. All season, there's been something to talk about.
No, I like it more plain and vanilla and buttoned down and crew cut.
Certainly good for this show.
It's been a wonderful season. Like, as we wrap up the regular season, it's been a tremendous regular season. As far as storylines go, like, I know there's a lot of goofiness and some stories that were ultra serious that demanded attention and still demands attention and needs to be taken very seriously. But as far as, like, you know, you just hope that at the beginning of every NHL season that it's interesting, and it's interesting right down to the wire. And last year, you know, to be honest, like in the Eastern Conference, like it was
January.
It was set. Yeah. And I think it was like around Christmas time. We said, okay, the Devils are playing the Rangers in the first round. It's going to be good. Oh, yeah, we know that that's going to happen. And we sort of had a little sort of, you know, pedestrian walk to the conclusion of the season. But there was that crazy 90 seconds that we had two nights ago.
Yeah.
Right, between the Philadelphia Flyers and the Washington Capitals and the Detroit Red Wings and the Montreal Canadiens, to say nothing of like these two more members of the 100 assists club. Like, I don't know that gets enough concert. Like, think about it. Like, 100 assists in a season going into this year, 66, 99, and 4. That's it.
They didn't leave many apples in the orchard, Jeff. There's not very many left.
And now two more.
Yeah.
In the same season. I don't know. And listen, the voting is difficult. Like, the Norris is going to be difficult.
Yep.
The only one that I think I'm going to have the easiest time with is
Vezina.
The Selke. I don't vote on the Vezina. GMs vote on the Vezina.
Oh, right. But if you had a vote, that would be an easy one.
Well, it would be my same vote for, and I'm going to figure out where I'm going to have him on my heart ballot, and that is Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah.
Now, again, here's the thing about Hellebuck. I think he should be included in the conversation. Having said that, you look at his numbers. Now, he has played more than his backup, but Laurent Boissois' numbers are similar, if not identical.
How does the team play in front of you?
Is that a reflection of the goaltender when I'm talking about Connor Hellebuck? Or, and Hellebuck has mentioned this, I'm the same goalie. Everything around me is different. Is that a reflection of the way that Rick Bonus has this blue line and this forwards playing?
Yeah, you got some homework to do, pal.
Got to put on my thinking toque tonight, Matty Marchese.
Well, while you're taking that drive tomorrow, you can do a lot of thinking.
Think about this one. I want to have it wrapped up tonight and have it in for first thing tomorrow. Okay. One of the things we should probably talk about, because we haven't in a while now, are the Montreal Canadiens. And yesterday on the program, we failed to mention, Matt Marchese, that Martin St. Louis had been extended by the Montreal Canadiens, picking up the option for two more years. So he is under contract for three more seasons with the Montreal Canadiens. We'll talk about the good stories, the bad stories, reasons for optimism if you're a Montreal Canadiens fan. And certainly having a peek at Lane Hudson gives you more than just a little bit of optimism there. Eric Engels from Sportsnet.ca drops by in a couple of moments. We'll finish up today's program talking about the Habs across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. Merrick Show continues with Engels.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday starting at noon Eastern across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts is this program. And this program right now will feature our go-to on the Montreal Canadiens, whether it's Jiří Slavkovský and his 20 goals, the further development of Nick Suzuki, or the debut of Lane Hudson. We go to Eric Engels from Sportsnet.ca. Eric, how are you today, pal?
I'm doing good, man. I'm all things Montreal Canadiens until I move on to cover the Winnipeg Jets and Colorado Avalanche in this first round. So looking forward to that.
Hopefully, you can bring us some good news on Gabriel Landeskog, although I believe there will be none. But nonetheless, let's get to the Montreal Canadiens here. And listen, Nick Suzuki took another step. Yuri Slafkovsky clearly took another step with the 20 goals. Lane Hutson looked fantastic in the two games that he played with Montreal. We'll start with the positives here. Martin St-Louis, you know, team picks up the option. What was the main positive, you know, in a non-playoff year that you took away from this year's Habs season?
Yeah, it's all that. Like, it's individual growth and collective growth, which may not be reflected in the standings, but it's certainly reflected if you watched all the games. And, you know, the Canadians, I think it was a mantra that probably got around the league, but was certainly, you know, heavily used in Montreal over the last number of weeks. They played in the most one-goal games in the NHL, 44 of them. They ended up losing 27 of them, 16 in OT or the shootout. And, you know, you look at that, you look at Kirby Dach going down in the second game of the season, yeah, and think, okay, maybe they're not, maybe if they pick up 10 wins with Kirby healthy and everybody else remaining in the same situation they were in this year, or Newhook not missing 12 weeks because he was another one of those guys who really grew on an individual level. Maybe they don't make the playoffs. Maybe they get a lot closer to them than they actually ended up. And I think they look at that as an opportunity to really grow next season with the hope that management kind of steps in and does a couple of things, addition and subtraction-wise, to get them that much closer. I think the big year, Jeff, is still a year away, you know, that the summer of 2025, when Carey Price's contract will be off the books and the maturity of the roster gets to a different place with Suzuki at his age and all these kind of kids that we've been seeing growing in Montreal getting into their primes. But I don't see a reason why they can't be that much more competitive next season.
How close do you think Suzuki is to being, you know, because sometimes these trophies are sort of reputational, but how close do you think Suzuki is to being in the Selke conversation?
Look, I think his name was mentioned here and there this year inside Montreal, outside of it also. He's not on my ballot, I can tell you that. Well, I don't like to reveal much about my ballot until the awards are revealed, but he's not on mine, and mostly because as much as I don't put too much weight into plus-minus, he is a minus on the season. I think it would be markedly different if Kirby Dach was around to relieve some of the stress within that area and if the Canadian center depth was in a different position. More importantly, like, whether, you know, just for him to be in consideration in terms of his name being in the conversation says a lot about how much he's grown as a player, because defensively, you know, he had a lot of room to grow coming into this season. 25 minutes a game, 23-plus minutes a game against the best competition in the world night after night without any insulation behind him.
Yep.
Like, he just had a fantastic season. And I think 77 points that he put up in 82 games, another 82-game season. He's got a long Ironman streak going. If he remains healthy, that's the floor of what I think he's capable of doing. And I don't know how many people thought that about Suzuki before the season. But, you know, 33 goals and 77 points later without anybody else around aside from Caulfield and Slafkovsky to really make that sing, I think that's the floor moving forward of what we're going to see from him over the next, like, 5 years.
I know you talk often and have written often about Martin St-Louis. So gets picked up for a two-year extension, so he is under contract for three more seasons with the Montreal Canadiens. At the time of his hiring, it was, I'll be blunt, it was a shock. It was a surprise. It seemed to come out of left field. No one's going to deny, you know, Martin St-Louis' credentials at all. We just wondered, I think all of us did, wondered about the ability to coach at the NHL level. From your point of view and conversations with Marty and talking to people in and around the team, how has he developed as an NHL coach? Because, again, he never did it before until he got the Montreal job. And what is the vibe around Marty? Like the sort of, you know, the wow factor of, hey, look, it's, you know, one of the best in the last generation to play in the NHL behind our bench. Like, that's kind of worn off now. But what's the vibe around St. Louis and the organization during this rebuild?
Before I answer, can I ask you a question just on a technical kind of side here? Do you see much variance within the systems that are played in the NHL?
And no.
If there is, no. Like,
no.
Are we looking at three different types of ways of playing and basically,
yes,
you know, a couple variables from team to team within those systems?
It's funny. Whenever I talk to players, they'll say, you guys in the media always talk about, oh, he needs to adapt to the system. It's going to take a while to learn that. Player after player is like, you know, there's like three or four different ways to play. Like that's where we're at.
So knowing that, like, my belief is that the best NHL coaches are the greatest salesmen, because the best system in the game is the one that everyone is bought into. Like, if I look at the team I'm about to go cover in the playoffs, when they're committed and bought into their system in the Winnipeg Jets, how many teams are better than them? I don't think the team they're about to play is better than them if they are committed. There were points of the season where they were not as committed as they should be to that system, and it really showed and was reflected specifically right before they went on this 7-game heater or 8-game heater, whatever it's up to now. So as far as St. Louis' credentials in Montreal and how he's grown, his ability to get every single guy bought into the program is universal. And it's one of the most impressive things I've seen in 16 years covering the Canadiens, because it's really a hard thing to do when you're in just past the infancy stage of a rebuild and the results are not coming night after night. Like, there was so much consistency in the way the Canadiens played, particularly in the second half of the season, that enabled all those one-goal games I mentioned. And Marty St. Louis is the guy you look to. And, mm-hmm, like, and then on an individual basis, like, just quickly, Juraj Slafkovský, like,
yeah.
If not for Marty, he's nowhere near where he is right now. And where he is right now is, he looks like he's on his way to being an unbelievable player in this league. Brendan Gallagher at the other end of the spectrum is 31 years old and looked at points this season like, this is really not going to get much better than this. And he finishes the season with 10 points in 8 games and credits Marty for all the adjustments they worked on together. And, you know, the one thing that kept coming back from management on Marty from day one till now, they continue to emphasize that the thing that made for a Hall of Fame career as a player for him was that his greatest skill was continuously getting better. And there's just been so much evidence of it in the process and the culture that's been growing around the Canadiens. And locking them up, mm-hmm, is the best news for them, for their players, but also for the attractiveness of the market, which obviously has had its challenges over the years. And I think is going to become less and less challenging with a guy like Marty at the helm.
You know, Eric, you just mentioned Juraj Slafkovský a second ago, and outside of maybe the obvious, which I think everybody pointed to last year, get the chin out of the chest, what did Slafkovský change this year? Or was this a matter of, like, this improvement, who they put him with?
I think, you know, we just talked about Marty and his greatest strength being able to get better. Like, and that's just a skill. Like, Brad Marchand is maybe the poster child for that,
yeah,
for that ability, in terms of modern current NHL players. I think the thing that separates the guys who are chosen first overall or even second overall in the NHL draft is the speed at which they progress. And maybe that's not the case for every single one of them, but just the rate of change is incredible. And as soon as, I think with the work that Adam Nicholas and Marty St. Louis did with Slafkovský, they really got him to focus on the process rather than the results. And that's why when it was going pretty rough, even at the beginning of the season, at first frustrated as he was, yeah, he was able to keep his head locked into what he needed to work on. And he managed to turn his biggest weakness within a year into his biggest strength. His play away from the puck, and getting him to the places he needs to be in to produce the way he did in the second half of the season, which was super impressive, it became his greatest strength. And I just, credit goes to the kid. He totally locked into the process and really devoted himself to becoming a better player. And I don't know what the ceiling is, Jeff. Like, Nick Suzuki thinks he's going to be one of the top 5 wingers in the game. I don't think that's beyond his reach if he continues to progress in the same way that he is. Kent Hughes said yesterday that, yeah, He expects that Slapp will go sideways again before he goes forward. He won't go backwards, which is normal. Like, you don't look at progress as linear in most cases, even in the cases of number one overall picks. But, man, like, I don't even want to put a ceiling on this kid, because, like, when he first said to me, I kind of model myself after Mecko Rantanen, and I was thinking it was a stretch, and after seeing what he did this year, I don't think it's a stretch at all.
You're going to see a lot of Rantanen, and as you mentioned, covering the Colorado Avalanche and the Winnipeg Jets. Let me end on this one. I got about 2 minutes left for you on this one. Lane Hutson, boy, the skating looks great. By the poise on the blue line and how calm he looks is fantastic. I think that, you know, all time will look back on that, you know, trying to deke the puck into the net on James Reimer and kind of flubbing it. You can understand the excitement. What do Habs fans, what do you make of Lane Hutson after two games?
It's such a small sample, but the most important thing within those two games was for him to prove that he has an NHL floor, was him to prove that he could pull off the basic plays in his own end and stand up to a battle in the corner or in front of the net and use his feet and his stick appropriately to make up for what he lacks in size. And even over that small sample, it was against a team that was desperate to make the playoffs and playing for its life, and he just... His floor was absolutely there, because we all know what the ceiling is. Like, this kid,
yeah,
is going, if he continues to establish that floor, his ceiling is NHL superstar.
Yep.
And I think the most expected thing was some of the stuff we saw from him in the offensive zone, and it was there right away. Like, just ice in his veins, according to his teammates. They had that. No concern over any of it. All I'm going to say this about Hutson, and it applies to Mike Matheson, who just put up 62 points with the Canadiens. These players who have the ability to access a skill level that is, you know, top 5 percentile in the NHL, there is a certain element of risk that they need to play with that is not the same quotient as other players that are beneath them in the talent level. And so I would caution Canadiens fans who didn't seem to learn the lesson on Matheson, that you better be able to tolerate that when he does make a mistake, Hutson or Matheson, it's going to be glaring. It's going to be the one that you're like, oh my God, I can't believe he just did that. Because there are so few players that can do what those guys can do. And if they're able to pull it off, the reward leads to many more wins than the other stuff. Like, I spoke to Matheson about it yesterday, Jeff, and he said, you know, we're never going to win any games if everybody's banging the puck off the glass. And he's right. And, like, you should just, if you're a Canadiens fan, appreciate what these guys can do, because they're going to be doing things that lead to many more wins than losses, no matter how glaring the mistakes appear on a highlight reel.
I'm really curious to see what Ken Hughes does this offseason. Eric, enjoy the Jets and the Avalanche, and we'll check back soon, pal.
I'm excited. Take care, Jeff.
You'll be good. The great Eric Engels covering the Montreal Canadiens and the opening round between the Jets and the Colorado Avalanche for Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Maddie, we'll finish up with a couple of quick hitters here. What did we leave out of the show today? As often it's numerous, and I want to make sure we clean things up.
Vasily Podkolzin signs a 2-year extension with the Canucks that will pay him $925,000 per season. Cade Weber was acquired by the Toronto Maple Leafs at the deadline for a 6th-round pick, if I'm not mistaken,
from Carolina.
He was Hockey East's Defensive Defenseman of the Year. He's a monster.
Huge.
He signs a 2-year deal, so it'll kick in this year, and then after next season, he becomes a restricted free agent. And then we have a schedule for this weekend.
Dun, dun, dun.
The Islanders will take on the Carolina Hurricanes in Raleigh Saturday, 5 p.m. Eastern. Toronto, Boston kicks off in Boston, 8 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. Both of those games available on Sportsnet, and of course the Leaf game is available on Hockey Night in Canada, CBC. And then the Lightning at the Panthers, 12:30, nice little afternoon, little matinee action.
Love that.
12:30 Eastern. And then Washington at New York with the Rangers hosting that one at Madison Square Garden, 3 p.m. Eastern. Both of those on Sportsnet.
So the Minnesota Wild tonight will face off against the Seattle Kraken. And the only reason I mention that is because I want to mention a tweet that I got from someone today about Marc-Andre Fleury, who said, considering he's coming back for one more season and this is going to be the final season for Marc-Andre Fleury, etc., does the NHL schedule maker, Steve Hatzepetros, book the Minnesota Wild in Pittsburgh on game 82?
Has to.
I don't know.
We have it. It's here. We have the information. Give it to us.
Okay, so stay tuned a little bit later on for the announcement of the Arizona Coyotes as well. In the meantime, thanks to all of our guests today, Eric Engels and Eric Francis from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Shannon Goldman kicked it off. Thank you, as always, to Matt Marchese. Our technical director is Lance Kennedy. Our camera operator is the great Jen Rolnick. And thanks to you for watching / listening across the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, or wherever you get your podcasts. I know we're having some issues with Apple Podcasts right now. We're working on it. Enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy the games tonight. We'll talk soon.